means the other 999 Kali Yugas, then the door to Vaikuntha is being opened. So only in this one time, then the door to, you know, Vrindavan.
That's why you'd say it's never been given before. It doesn't mean that in the last day of Brahma, you know, in that one time when Swayam Krishna and Swayam Chaitanya come, that they also didn't give. But, you know, it's a long time ago. So it's, you could say it's as good as, you know, never been given. Like that. So it's just a regular occurrence. So that means there's the element of going to Vaikuntha seems to be a more common aspect.
So how does that play into one's eternal rasa?
It's just those, in other words, those who, it's their eternal rasa to be in Vrindavan, then it's just you collect them all together in this Kali Yuga. You know, because you have that Brahmanda Brahmite Konavagyavan Jeev. It's just, they you know, they move the Jeevas around. It's not that you're always stuck in this time frame, you know, the thing saying, you know, you're here and then the next like this and then they go back and it's all happening in this time and this place. But, you know, they kind of leave out of the equation, let's say, going to Creamy Bojan for 100,000 years. So it's not exactly that, you know, then you would be, no, but then when you come back into this Kali Yuga situation, same kind of situation. So then, you know, that was you. So they're just kind of connecting them that it's, you know, I'm here and then I was in 40s I was like this, and the late 1800s like this, and then the 1700s I was like this, and like that. But that, those are just the different times, but in between. Because you wouldn't go from one Malecha birth to another Malecha birth. Generally, Malecha birth, you go into the animal species. You know, when someone who's following things according to Shastra and the mode of goodness maintains human birth, even though that they're not God conscious. But these others, they wouldn't be. So after going through all the hells and everything and animal life species, they come back to the human form. So they'll come back basically in a similar situation of what they left. You know, because that was where the mentality was. Now it's a matter of now continuing. So then, you know, these things are all... So they you know, you get moved around. Wherever's the ideal situation.
Okay, then what about Murari Gupta? And he's in Mahaprabhu's Leela. So how does he...
But he's not going into the conjugal rasa. He's still staying with Lord Ramachandra. So that means the aspect of Lord Chaitanya's kirtan, that's open to all areas of Vaikuntha, all, you know, of the spiritual world. But then, because that means that whatever is your place in the spiritual world, plus that. Right.
Plus a form in that lila, or plus that enhancing your...
Well, you could have a form in that lila, it's not a problem.
How is it enhancing him in his position in Ram lila?
It's not necessarily, it's a matter of just you're in two places at once. Generally people are in one place, but you can be in two. But it's Lord Chaitanya's lila doesn't contradict another place. So therefore, then it works. You know, so the jivas, like, they wouldn't be in Vrindavan and in Dwarka. Right? Internal potency will be, because just as Krishna expands, they expand. But the jivas, you'll be in one place or another. So Lord Chaitanya's lila is universal. So then you can be in both. It's not a problem.
What about the concept of Ishtadeva? So it seems like what you're saying is, okay, the door to Braj is open in this Kali Yuga, but that means now, one's Ishtadev, Isham Radhe Sham, not Lakshmi Narayan.
Yes.
So it seems to be in some way a contradiction of eternal relationship.
Why would it be a contradiction?
Because with Lakshmi Narayan, I can't have Panjama Rasa or Sakya Rasa in the way I can have.
That means I don't understand how this differs from the discussion of Murari Gupta.
Let's say my eternal rasa is conjugal rasa.
Okay.
How does it manifest in Vaikuntha?
It doesn't. So where's the Vaikuntha aspect?
So it can only manifest in Braj.
Yes.
So then you're saying if I have that, I'll come in this Kali Yuga together.
Yeah. Yeah.
then I have to wait around for this Kali Yuga if I show up in another one?
Because it's always going on. So it's whichever universe it's the one, you just transfer to there. Because to Maya, it's all just one energy. To us, it's a long way. You know, but there, it's just your move. That's why it says Brahmanda Brahmite. It means from universe to universe, not even just from body to body or planetary system to planetary system, even universe to universe, the jivas, whichever will be the ideal place for that. You know, so it means that, you know, it's got it perfectly tailored, you know, so that you're on the particular side, you're the blade of grass on that particular side of the railroad track that just gets, you know, too much sun and this and that, or not enough sun, and then you're the one that the dog comes and pees on, you know, like that, you know, so it's perfectly worked out. So if it's not available in this universe, they'll move to the universe that it is, so. You'll get what you deserve. You don't have to worry.
I always kind of understood it like you have this nature to go to Vaikuntha, but Mahaprabhu goes, no, okay, we're opening the door to Braj.
But it's not that you need to take it. See, because the thing is in Vaikuntha, they don't have a problem with Radha Krishna Leela. It's just that Lakshmi Narayan is performing that Leela. So they still have that mood of servitorship. Like in the South India tradition, there are certain devotees that only worship Radha and Krishna, but they're Vaikuntha devotees, like that. So it's for them it's not a problem, like that. They just, so that's what I'm saying. It's not a problem for them to have both, like that, because for them the rasa doesn't change. It's just the particular form of the deity. Like we listen to pastimes of Ramachandra, we don't have a problem. But our relationship's with Krishna. But it's not that Krishna doesn't come as Ram, doesn't come as Dwarkadish, doesn't like, you know, like this, but our relationship is with Krishna. You know, it's just like the wife's at home, you know, with the husband, and then he puts on his, you know, outfit, goes to the court. So there he's the high court judge. She knows he's the high court judge, but she doesn't have a relationship with the high court judge. She has a relationship with the husband. Same person, but so in the same way, it's just the whichever realm you're from, you have your relationship with the Lord from that realm, but you can appreciate the pastimes in all the other realms. That's why Prabhupada mentions that this idea that comes up that I'll only listen to, you know, Krishna Leela with the gopis is totally bogus, because the gopis don't just listen to that Leela. They listen to all the Leelas. Right? So that's the aspect, is what is your relation, but you can appreciate all the different forms. Like that.
Is that? Yeah. Can I ask one other? We're answering this question regarding Ritvik, and then you said that sometimes someone will get reinitiated. It's, I think you said, more to create a kind of psychological connection, but it's not needed?
It's not necessary, because the official connection has been made. The point is the connection is made, you have to nourish the connection, so that's done through siksha. It's not done through that, I did the initiation, so now it's there. You know, it's just like you have the marriage ceremony. It's not because of the marriage ceremony, now you have a great, great marriage. It's because what you do in the marriage. So in the same way, as the diksha is just so that you're officially connected, but now you have to actually take the instructions and follow them as life and soul. So whether it's from that same person who gave diksha or from another person that's in the bona fide line, then either way it'll be nourished. So therefore, reinitiation as such is not actually necessary. But if people psychologically feel better, great. But how many times can they do that? You know what I'm saying? You know, if they did it once and then that's it. But, you know, with these, I mean, some, you know, in Italy they were joking about it. You know, get nine, how you say? Buy nine, get one free. You know, it's just, it was completely insane over there. So that's why it's not a recommended thing. So when they're talking about reinitiation, when the Jiva Goswami Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's talking about if you've taken initiation from a smart or a caste Goswami, they're technically Apasampradaya. So even though the ritual is the same, the mantras will be the same, your sadhana will be the same, still it's not in the bona fide light. Therefore you take reinitiation because you actually went through the appropriate initiation ceremony, but the person who gave the initiation wasn't appropriate. So you're doing the ritual again. But this thing within the line where you have a bona fide spiritual master, and they may give up their position or be unable to perform. There's no need to take again initiation, but there's a need to take shelter of the other Vaishnavas. That you have to do. So, does that make sense? But that takes more maturity, more everything like that. The other one's just very nice. You just make a rule, everybody does it, Hari Bal, it goes really great until another couple of years later when it keeps going on and on and on. And then people lose faith in the system, and then, so that's why the acharyas don't recommend it, you know, because, you know, that's the idea that if your guru falls down, then you're just like a new bhakta. That has nothing to do with our philosophy. Absolutely nothing.
Is it an offense or wrong on the part?
No, it's not wrong. It's not wrong. It's just one of those things that's unnecessary. You know, just like, let us say, you know, taking care of a baby or the mom taking care of the baby. There's so many things that they do that may not be necessary. All the goo goo ga ga and certain things like that. Certain sentimental situations aren't necessary. Like I sometimes, you know, you get a kid that comes to the school. And I remember one mom, she was telling this whole list of things he won't eat and how he'll eat and this and that. She was going on and on, just really worried the guy's going to die. Right? He sits down with us, and you know, a couple of days he's not overly happy, but within a short time he's eating everything. And she's shocked. How is it possible he'll never eat that at home? Because at home he has the choice, but at school that's what's there. If you want to eat, eat it. If you don't want to eat, hey, you know, the lunch is after another 4 hours, you know, and then again after another so many hours. So, you know, they're practical, and they just go, okay, it's food, I'll eat it. You know, they look around, no one else is like turning purple and their head's falling off or something. So then, okay, it's edible, you know? Like that. So that's what we're meaning. It's unnecessary. It plays to sentiments that aren't actually necessary to play to. But if people want to do it, great. But the problem is if you do it once, then it's fine. But if you have to keep doing it, or that always comes up, then it was better to have not done it. Because then you keep the focus in the neophyte mentality of that the Diksha Guru is the most important, not that Siksha of Diksha is the most important. Diksha Guru is a designation of, is a subsection of Siksha Guru, not that Diksha Guru is Guru and then there's also Siksha Gurus. No, Guru means Siksha. And then within that you have Diksha Guru, Vartma Pradarsha Guru, Siksha Guru, preachers, Adi Guru. These are all subcategories of the instructing element of the function of the spiritual master. So by doing it that way, then you keep it within the neophyte mentality, rather than that they have to, that the mature mentality is that it's the siksha that you're lacking. So now, instead of just being sentimental towards the guru, actually look at the instructions of the guru and take them as, you know, take them seriously. And so then they'll start looking at that aspect. So instead of just the emotional interactive element, you know, the guru smiled, therefore he's my guru. You know, it's a matter of the instructions. I'm able to understand them. I'm able to apply them in my life. I'm able to get results. That's why he's my guru. So it's just a matter of whether you want the movement to progress, you know, stay in the neophyte, cultivate the neophyteness, or try to move it to the Madhyam platform. Now, the neophyteness in the meeting is very easy to deal with. And then outside the meeting, you don't have to do anything. All it is you have to have another 200 meetings because it didn't work. Well, if you, to understand yourself how siksha is the thing means in the meeting, everybody actually has to pay attention and think. It's more than just management. And it means when you leave that room, you're going to have to preach and explain to everyone how it works. A lot more work. But the effect is you won't have to have another meeting. One meeting's enough. And the other one, you can go on having meetings forever and you'll still never work it out. Because bhakti still isn't a matter of management. You organize preaching. Like that. You see that standards are being maintained. But devotion's cultivated by preaching.
So why is there misconception that you're connected through Diksha and not, you can't create that same connection through Siksha. Where did that
Because of our conditioning. The point is that for the liberated soul, for when they take up, when they accept the order of the spiritual master, they are initiated. That's the Bhagavad initiation. It doesn't require ritual, but it requires that you're liberated. Because on the liberated platform, you won't cheat, you won't make mistakes, you won't be an illusion, you won't do that. So as soon as you decide, here's my guru, then he is your guru, and you'll do it eternally. The conditioning is, as the modes change, you might change. So therefore, the Pancharatric system, you're simply taking the Bhagavat and formalizing it by having a ritual. Then the ritual is there, you know something's happened because the conditioned soul needs religion. Right? And everybody else knows. So you can't, you know, today this one's your guru and then tomorrow say someone else. Now wait a minute, I was there, you were initiated by this guy, you know. Otherwise you would see that happen. So it's just the Pancharatra is how to take the Bhagavat platform and by establishing what are the standard ways of viewing and doing activities on the Bhagavat platform, you make that set of rules that's called Pancharatra. So technically there's no difference between the two. But, you know, because the mentality is same, just one is rag, one's prema. I mean, excuse me, rag and one's vaidhi. But it's both God-conscious. The Vedic, it's all meant to be God-conscious, but the common element is the mode of goodness. So you can perform the Vedic without having the right consciousness. So that's what we talk about here, is that you don't have the right consciousness, but you're doing the right activities. Like a smart is doing the right activities, just wrong consciousness. So then it's a matter of changing the consciousness. But with it, between Bhagavad and Pancharatra, you're not talking about consciousness. You're talking about finer details of devotional service, getting distracted by thinking that the rules, which are secondary, is more important, it becomes primary. And the devotion, you don't always, you may forget about, like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Question about Vipin Bihari Goswami. Did Bhaktivinoda Thakur take initiation from him because he was the only Vaishnava available?
No, I'm sure it was probably just there. He's there, it's easily available. He's coming in a bona fide line. You know, in other words, the potency of the mantra would be there, but they don't understand what the mantra is or anything, so they can't give any siksha. So the diksha aspect is still alive, but the siksha aspect is not. And so for us, you're going to go back to Godhead by the siksha aspect. So that's why he took siksha from Jagannath Das Babaji.
So he's taking diksha to be accepted by the general public as a bona fide...
No, it's just that's the process. You're supposed to take diksha, right? Because the Vaishnavs that are coming are acting within as if they're neophytes. So the neophytes get initiated. You know, Krishna got initiated. Ramachandra gets them. They all do it.
Okay, so... When Sri Bhaktisiddhanta went and spoke on what is a Brahmin, what is a Vaishnava, Tiranivas, my wife was telling me yesterday, was saying that actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur could have gone, but he didn't want to go because he being to be Hari Goswami was going to be there. So he was respecting his...
Yeah, because you respect that. You know, it's just like, but it's just that, it's just... If in other words, if his son wasn't there, he'd do it. But the point is that his son's there, then he can come in from another angle, you know, because then you also have the added thing that he's not a grihastha, you know, being a brahmachari, being that, then there's another element that's there.
So sometimes we've found situations in ISKCON where someone's Diksha Guru said something that someone disagreed with so strongly they rejected him as their Diksha Guru. They just said...
But the point is this, what he said. Did he do the ritual wrong? You know, he said the name wrong when he gave it. He chanted on 107 beads and missed the, you know, 108th, or, you know what I'm saying? You know, he missed out one of the regulative principles. So the ritual, was it wrong? So that's the point. He's your Diksha Guru because the ritual. So unless the ritual was wrong, he's not in the bona fide line. You know, like that, then you have grounds for rejecting the diksha aspect. So if he doesn't appreciate the Siksha, find another Siksha guru. You know, it's like, that's the thing is, without knowledge, like you were asking the other day, why get into these fine details? That's why. Because devotees are not discriminating between what's what. Like
how do you respect your Diksha guru if you disagree with him and you're taking instructions from the Siksha guru who also disagrees with some of what he said?
The point is when you see him, you're offering obeisances. You know, you're being respectful. You're dealing properly. The etiquette is there. The normal etiquette is also that you explain it and then, you know, that you want to take shelter of someone else.
So you should get his permission.
You should get his permission. As etiquette, but at the same time as then either he can work it out or he should give permission.
So if a disciple is losing faith in some of the instructions or in general for some reason, as long as that Diksha Guru is okay with taking Siksha, then that disciple should not feel guilty, bad, etc.?
It depends on whether they're correct or not. It means that there's also disciples that disagree with the spiritual master and they're wrong. You know, so then if they feel guilty, then what's the problem? But the point is if they don't feel guilty, they may go on, get purified, and then later on they'll understand the weakness. And then they'll, you know, try to rectify it.
Then one more aspect, similar. Nothing, no problem with one's Diksha Guru, but one is more attached to Siksha Guru. It's closer, it's more intimate.
So it's just a matter of working it out with the Diksha Guru. Ideally, that's known before you take initiation. I've seen arrangements like that. Is that this person's like Siksha Guru, he's the main person and all that. But at the same time as you're here, we regularly see and have a relationship, so I'd like to take Diksha from you. But the relationship with this other person, then that's very important to them. And so that it's worked out. And if they agree, then that might be. If they don't agree, then, you know, then something's got to give. You know, so it's either you don't hang out here or you find someone else who is. Like that. You know, it's all personal. That's the problem with it. Bureaucracies don't work well with it. Devotional service is so individual because it's self-realization, not group realization. You know, it's self-realization, so it's so individual that you have to deal with each case individually. There's general principles that always work. But now, which details are being applied to which individual, that's always going to change. But if you start from the detail, and so that the detail is understood, then it makes it much easier to apply the details because you've already worked it out as a group, the principle. And then you give a few examples, that might work it out for some, but then few are left and they need some more specific examples. But it cuts down the process greatly. But if you just deal with externals, then each one's different, and then the natural thing is this so different, we just have to have one rule for everybody, and as soon as you have one rule for everybody, you fail. That's what the Artha Shastra says, Niti Shastra says. If a master deals with all his servants the same, he will fail. Not he may fail, he might fail, sometimes you fail, it's just he will fail. If you can't tell the difference between one servant and another, you know, their abilities, their natures, their needs, and all that, then you will fail.
What about the situation in which a guru has some trouble? Maybe he changes his ashram, maybe he was a sannyasi. And then it's found out, you know, periodically he's had some trouble. But basically, he's practicing Krishna consciousness. It seems that a lot of devotees at that point don't see him any longer as their Diksha guru.
Yeah, it means that is why there is the. It means, depending upon the situation, it's stressed or it's kind of like finessed. But otherwise, that's why it's called Prakrita Bhakta, because all they see is material. It means technically, one has to understand the neophyte devotee is a Bhakti Abbas. It's not actually a devotee. It's like the. What is a boss? It's not reflection. Shadow. They're a shadow of a devotee. In other words, they're aspiring to be a devotee. And because of that, they're glorious. And because it's the nature of the soul to be a devotee, Therefore, it's a natural progression. It's dynamic. It's viable. But if they allow too much of the mundane to cloud their spiritual understanding, it will just slow down their development. So that's why then the idea is leadership has to show what's the proper mentality. That's why, that means, you were in Bhagavatam class last Sunday? That's exactly why I push the point is morality is not going to solve your, you know, modern, mundane, managerial problems. Because then by taking, oh, but he did this wrong. It's like, okay, in the room, who's making that complaint? Let them raise their hands who never ate a cow. That stays in your genes for 2.5 generations. If you ate cows, you're contaminated with that sin. Your child will be contaminated. Their child, partway through their life, that will be removed. It's that powerful. It just doesn't go. It affects the mentality. That's why you see the Mlechas by nature very easily get angry, very easily lose respect, don't expect. These are natural qualities of Mlechas. It's just normal, you know. So, therefore, is that, and you're comparing that to, you know, being a little loose somewhere? Means that, not saying that's good. It's also nonsense. But you can't compare them as weight. Even in the Mahapaps, you know, killing a guru, killing the Brahmin, is the worst. And in that category, equal weight is killing cows. Now the fourth one down, that's, you know, the guru's bed. So now you can talk illicit sex, right? So it doesn't compare. It's a bad one, but it doesn't compare. And then to make that as the prominence and then finesse, oh, well, now we're chanting, so it's all gone. So why is it, if you have faith in the name, that yesterday you were doing smoking, drinking, everything, today you moved in the temple, you're chanting, and now they're considered pure. It's just standard thought. Because the chakra supports that. So why is it here that they're going along, if they have a problem, then afterwards they start chanting, then they're not purified. Oh no, if you were a devotee and you did sin, then that's eternally damned. But that's not our philosophy, that's Christianity. It's not even Judaism. You know, it's not Buddhism, it's specific to Christianity. Christianity, this immaculate concept. They can't even have God. You know, Joseph and Mary can't even have sex. You know what I'm saying? Because everything's got to be immaculate. Everybody, no one's married. No one's this. Where did that come from? Jesus is, everybody's married. You know, your rabbis are all married. What's the thing? Everybody else, the other religions, the priests are married. You know, where does this come from? And so somebody now, it's important in devotional, so where does that come from? No, but he was a devotee, did something wrong. What's the difference? Maya's Maya. You know? Maya's Maya. So the point is if you can't have that broadness of understanding, you shouldn't be making the decisions on these areas. You know? Because this takes devotional understanding. This means you have to know the shastra. It's not a whim. It's not a matter. But no, but the public, what do we say to the public? Preach to the public. That's what you're here for. If you can't preach to the public, then why are you in the position? You're not willing to go out there and tell everybody this is the way it is and answer their questions, then why are you there? It's just a management position? But then management never is the top. Management's not the top. Spiritual's the top. Brahmins are top, not Kshatriyas. You know? It's just the way it is. So then, therefore, if you're top, that's Brahminical, that means teacher. So you solve your problems by teaching. Kshatriya solves it by administrating. Like that. And if possible, they're very careful that they choose qualified people, you know, that won't have the problems, and they know the problems. So a Vaishya will just choose someone who's good at his skill. Then if he has problems, just hire another one. You know, so one exclusively is on preaching, one understands that principle, and the third one doesn't care at all. Morality is pranamoy. Pranamoy is artha. It's the position of businessman. So in a bourgeois culture, which means a businessman's culture, for them to think like that, it's normal. So we can't really complain. But we can't accept that this is actual proper Vaishnava Siddhanta. It's just, you know, the point is it's said very clearly in the, what's the next name? I don't remember. Krishna something. It's one of the books that deals with all this. He makes it clear. So the point is in the other shastras, they also say, the point is he unviable now? Is he not going to practice? He would rather be out there in Maya. If that's the case, then yes, now you take shelter of someone else. But if they've had a problem and they're, you know, functioning in their capacity and doing their best and trying to move forward in that, then that still works. It's still a connection.
What if he's been gone for 10, 20 years, he comes back, he's...
Then you have to just, then the senior Vaishnava, just see what the mentality is. And if it's good, then nice. And if it's not, then...
So let's say his disciples have not taken the initiation. And now he comes back, do they still worship him as their
diksha? No, then you start off with siksha. And if that everything works nicely, then you bring in the diksha aspect. You know, it's just a matter of, you know. In other words, maturity has to be there. Because otherwise, if one makes decisions from the neophyte platform, it'll always be a problem.
So if you know, now some of them are coming back, at least one of them, I think. So let's say a devotee did that. He's taking siksha, he finds that this person is every much as... He's actually more mature now than he was before. And then I put his picture on the altar when I directed.
But the thing is how have you been maintaining your devotional service all these years?
I took shelter of Prabhupada, and you know, I remember the instructions he gave me.
Okay, but the thing is how many people actually you see that don't have faith in any other Vaishnavas than that guru and have lasted for 20, 30 years and are directly active and doing pujas and everything like that? I don't think they would go together. Because the point is if you can't appreciate the Vaishnava society, you're too neophyte to actually be able to go on in a dynamic way yourself. Because it's all about Vaishnava association. Now, if they've taken shelter of other Vaishnavas as Siksha Gurus, they didn't change the diksha. They just, so Siksha Gurus, then, you know, if there's one person, two persons, whatever, if you add that person's picture to that, who's going to complain? But if now you've been cultivated by them for the last 20 years, and now you remove their pictures and put this, now that's very neophyte. You wouldn't do that. Because in any case, the normal thing would be, anyway, you have your Diksha Guru and whoever your Siksha Gurus are. This idea that, you know, as soon as you have the Diksha Guru, then you drop the Siksha Gurus, that's very neophyte. Popular, but totally neophyte. And that's why they have problems. Because if anything happens to the Diksha Guru, they have nobody. The normal thing is if you have the Diksha Guru and two or three Siksha Gurus, something happens to the Diksha Guru, you have two or three people. It still goes on very nicely. So in other words, the neophyte creates his own religious process, and then when he gets problem from it, then blames, you know, Vaishnavism or, you know, the Vedic or something for it. No, it's their own religion. Who said you're supposed to drop? You know, like when Chutananda left, who said that now no one should listen to their tapes, his tapes? Now they're all bogus. You know, in Vishnu Jan, it's all bogus. Who said? Who made that up? You know? Like that. So that's the thing, is that they don't understand the eternal platform of devotional service. So if he wrote the songbook and it was bona fide, then why it's not still good now? Maybe he's not practicing, but who cares? The book's still good. So this is all neophyte. We create this ourselves. And then after a while, there's nobody left. And then you have to, you know, change the whole thing, you know, to accommodate. But we don't go back to the spiritual standard. We change it to some other. Instead of using a traditional form, we use a modern form. And it's like, you know, it just gets worse and worse.
If somebody takes diksha from a guru who can't give personal instruction, although instruction is there on the internet, general classes, books, should he be thinking at that time, I'm going to need a siksha guru because I don't have any access to this, this guru. You know, it's too many. Or I have minimal access at best. Mm-hmm. Should that be a normal way of thinking? And should one, if thinking that way, think that this six-year guru is actually going to have a more intimate relation with me?
Depends what you're calling intimate. Because remember, we're dealing with conditioning here. So, means there's so many Vedic examples of the sannyasi or something comes through, stays one night or, you know, or a rainy season, and then leaves. And during that time, they take initiation, get instructions, they never see the spiritual master again the rest of their life. And based on those instructions, they cultivate that in their whole life and they advance. So that's the point, is it's not the constant interaction is what's necessary. It's that application, a contemplation of what has been said, what instruction, and applying it in your situation, right? So that aspect remains, and it's not that it gets any less. For the neophyte, it gets less. But it doesn't otherwise. Now, the same time is that you're supposed to associate with Vaishnavas, so that means you take shelter of other Vaishnavas also around there, and then they support what that is. You know, it's just a natural kind of thing. So there may be more a physical kind of proximity or more discussions, but it's not that. I've generally seen is that the discussions of the disciple with the Diksha Guru tend to be less spiritual than the disciple's discussions with the Siksha Guru. The Siksha Guru, because it's just Siksha, therefore they just ask spiritual questions. You don't get all trippy, the emotional thing, this and that. But the Diksha Guru, it's all about, you know, should I live here, should I live there, should I do this or that, or, you know, should I wear this or wear that, or, you know, eat this or that, or my husband said this, what about that? And they don't ask those things to the Siksha Guru. Siksha Guru is that, you know, I read this in Gita and I didn't understand this, could you explain it? So even the neophyte's concept of what the Diksha Guru is, what the function, in other words, they expect them to do the duties of a father, a biological father. So those aspects are not important. So if you think that I'll get that from this other Siksha Guru, therefore it's more of an intimate relationship, it may be on the conditioned platform, but it's not necessarily on the spiritual platform. Now, because of that, you're more relaxed, more surrendered, you get more spiritual benefit, great. But the point is that's more of an informal, and the Diksha Guru still remains as the formal relationship. You know, so it's just a matter of being able to deal with many relations. So for most of the world, actually it's not a problem. Being able to function with multiple authorities, multiple relationships and all that, because they have families. But you're somehow or another the, you know, first world Western culture, you know, means, I think it's now you can't even say you have a nuclear family. You have to say like a protonic family or something, you know, or, you know, atomic particle family, because, you know, you don't even know if you'll get them all. You know, it means the other day there's one person is that, you know, the parents are married, then the parents divorce. So then the kid stays with one of the parents, you know, a normal thing. Then the parent remarries again. Then they divorce, and now the kid stays with the new parent that wasn't the biological. So now both biological parents are gone, and the third parent, and that's who they grow up with. As devotee, you know, like that. So it's fun, you know. So therefore, you know, it even becomes even, you know, atomic particle family becomes even difficult to. You know, how you say it? The shadow atomic particle family, reflection, the atomic particle bimba family, I don't know, it's just, it becomes, so the difficulty comes is that then there's not an ability to work with many authorities at once. You know, because you didn't have a mother and a father, that there were two of them, plus there were grandparents, plus there were a few uncles and aunts, and plus you had an older brother or sister, you know, you had all this together, so you can balance all of them. So you can have all these as authorities, but just then it's one absolute, you know, authority and that's it. And at the same time is then, in the same breath, if you're talking social things, then, you know, they're anti, you know, dictatorial, this and that. How does that work? How is it on the social platform, then it's not, but on the spiritual platform, it is? You know, it's like, you know, how do you, it's very imbalanced. And therefore, so much social difficulty. But most all this is just lack of understanding the social aspects of the culture. It's not really philosophical. It's just culture. So if someone's from a background where there's more exposure to culture, then generally they'll have less problems with it. It doesn't mean it won't come up a problem, but you can explain it very easily because there's some reference point. But those who haven't been exposed to much culture, you know, either way in personal dealings or, you know, some variety of aspect of eclectic element or varieties of social situations, they don't have a reference point, so it makes it even harder. So you just have to wait as the heart becomes purified, and then it'll make sense one day.
I think part of the problem also is when we're reading Shastra, when it says guru, in our
heads, it just means
Diksha. Yeah.
But it should mean guru means all these. You know, you have the same problem come up with lady gurus, is that, oh, they can be gurus. Of course they can be gurus. Siksha guru, everybody's Siksha guru. But the point is that... And you have a personal relationship, it is, you know, basically a fixed kind of thing, and, you know, like that. But at the same time as, no, it has to be Diksha. But then the problem comes up is that then you're dealing with a conditioning element, you know, because that aspect is specifically for the conditioning. When we talk about beyond the body, that's Siksha. Diksha is not beyond the body. Diksha is because you have one. That's the point. There is... Pancharatrik Diksha, because you have a conditioned nature, you have a body. So to say, oh, we're not this body, we don't care, then great, then you're a Bhagavat, then work on that platform. So it's either you work on the Bhagavat and then don't care about anything, or if you are going to care about it, then you follow the Pancharatrik. But you can't just pick and choose as you like. That's cheating. That's the thing. You can't use the same argument two ways. It's not logical. But that's the difficulty. It's like you say, it's automatically, it means Diksha. But the point is Diksha has a certain function, but it's nourished by Siksha. You don't have Siksha, you know, it's not really initiation. Right? Like that. The ritual may be there, but it's the Siksha that actually makes it work.
Wasn't there a system sometimes in Gaudiya Math where one acharya was the one who initiated everybody, but not necessarily the Siksha guru, or there may have been someone more prominent?
I mean, just in the Gaudiya line. No, that's very common. The Diksha guru is one person, Siksha guru is another. I mean, so, you know, Narottam, Srinivas, and Shamananda, it was like that. They had the Diksha gurus, but then the Siksha gurus were someone else. Yeah, none of the three were initiated by Jiva Goswami, but he was the Siksha guru. He was the one training them. You know, one was Sridhar Chaitanya, one was Lokanath, and I'm not sure who the third one was. But, you know, so they were... The point is that it's not an uncommon thing for the Siksha guru to be more prominent, but it's not that formal relationship with the Diksha guru is doesn't remain. Because the point is your connection is there through them, and because of that connection... And Krishna being pleased, therefore you're able to understand the Siksha. Like that. So it's a dynamic. One has to be able to function with all those things at once.
Is the Siksha guru getting karma? Or their Siksha disciple?
It depends upon the surrender. If they're on the sad platform of Sadguru, then probably, yeah. But if they're preachers, no. Because the thing is you have three levels. You have the Adi Guru, you have Sadguru, and you have the preachers. Now, the point is, as we see, is Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya, so he's the Adi Guru. Then he is a Sadguru for his disciples. But let's say there are other people in other institutions that accepted his teaching and that he was, you know, he inspired them. He's just a preacher to them. You know? So, and then within our society, then that position of Adi Guru then is filled. So then now you're dealing with Sadguru and preachers. So someone may be a preacher to one person, a guru to another, and then it switches around. So That aspect is there. And even there, you can have the Diksha Guru is automatically Sadguru, but then the Siksha Guru might also be on that kind of level due to the nature of the relationship. But it's just like you go to a temple, you preach there because they're members of ISKCON. And you try your best to benefit them. You may know them personally, get to know, but you're not taking responsibility for them. You may have a great relationship, but you're not taking responsibility. So the point is where you take responsibility in that kind of thing. You know, so like, does that make sense? The temple president is automatically Siksha Guru, but he's a Siksha Guru as long as you're in his temple. You're not in his temple, he's not your Siksha Guru anymore. Then another temple president is. Unless you had a really good relationship, then maybe you maintain it, but it doesn't necessarily have to come to the Sadguru platform. So you have all these ingredients that you have to be able to deal with at once, but everybody wants it just nice little clear little boxes, little arrows, you know. I mean, that's so 19, what is it? You know, it's not in this, it's at least 20 years old, that stuff. You know? Like that. But they really want it to be like that, but it doesn't work like that. That just is to give an indication. You know? It's like karma yoga doesn't function on its own. You also have knowledge remembering Krishna. Jnana yoga doesn't function on its own. You have activities remembering Krishna. Jnana yoga doesn't function on its own. You have activities and knowledge. So that whole package together is called Buddhi Yoga. Then whichever is prominent, then that's where you cultivate. Someone's new, so it's going to be more karma, they're more thoughtful, the jnana, you know, it's like that. It's going to... But it's all one package, but they want it to be separate things that this one doesn't contact that, and what's the control of this one and that one, which... It's never going to work. It can't. It's just a matter of... These formulas are given to use in a dynamic way. If you use them in a static way, then you'll never... The arrow is not static. What is that arrow? Okay, you put the box and you have the name, and you put another box and you have that line between them. What is the line? That is never defined. They define the line, then okay, then it can be dynamic. But it's not even a concept that the line needs to be defined. It doesn't even come up. It doesn't even enter anyone's brain. So therefore, how can it work? One box, another box, then? How is that going to... You know, you have the car and you have the driver. And unless they somehow or another, there's a combination. What is the process of combining?
It seems what's happening is that there are some of the leaders talking about Siksha Guru, but what you see in the culture, it's not manifest, so it doesn't register in people's minds.
Because it's culture. And you have to understand the culture and preach the culture. That's the whole point, is that that's why Prabhupada, you know, the importance of establishing places in India is that you can be exposed to the culture. And then from that, learn that. You know, so then it's a whole different kind of environment. Because when you see the culture, then you can deal with these refined elements. You know, then it becomes very easy. But Siksha also just becomes a mechanical thing. The point is we're talking personal, personal, personal. But we do everything mechanically without the person. You know? But the point is, this personal means, yes, it'll be more trouble. But it's the trouble's on the personal side. In mechanics, it's much easier. The other one is on the mechanics are easy, but the personal is very difficult. So those with authority issues will always choose mechanics. And those that don't have authority issues will always choose people. Like that. So that's the difficulty. It's the problems are social. There's very few philosophical. Like that. I think the Ritwik is the only one you could say is the philosophical. Everything else, whatever they bring up, is all social. Like that. And so all it is basically a lack of culture, a lack of exposure to the culture, a lack of understanding it itself or how to apply it or the importance of applying it. You know, it's just like, you know, every year, you know, go traveling, the same questions come up with the same doubts about the same aspects of the culture and why do we have to do it? You know, and even you explain the background of it, then it's not something that should be applied. And you find those areas that they apply it, they get good results.
So if someone comes to me and says, I want you to be my Siksha Guru. So, That seems like a very broad spectrum.
Yeah, so then you ask, what do you mean? So as soon as they come and say, I want you to be my Sikshaguru, what do you mean by Sikshaguru? And after they've defined it, then you ask, why? Why me? And then if you see that it's all based on some actual intelligence and some, you know, commitment rather than just some sentiment or some insanity, then you can say, okay.
I think what I see happening a lot is that people want someone they can ask questions and they have faith in someone.
Yeah,
and it's not really a relationship beyond that.
Yeah, and that, but that's called the preacher. That's called the preacher. That's the third level of siksha. Is that's the preacher. So that's why you're saying, what do you mean by it? And if it's just there, is that, it's there. But the point, if they want the sudden level, then you say, we'll start with the preacher level. Then we'll see if it develops. The point is, it has to develop. It's not that you just rubber stamp it, now it's a, you know, it's a, no, it has to develop. And then you just see with time. And if it's a good relationship, it'll develop. If it's not, then, you know, it'll, if it was a fad, it'll fade away like any other fads. The whole thing is very dynamic, very personal, and very practical, and it accommodates everything. That's the point, is that we'll think, no, there's some weakness here, we tried it. But the basic thing, I'll boldly say they didn't try it. Because if they tried it, it would have worked. You know, but because it wasn't understood, so therefore it wasn't applied properly, therefore they didn't get the result. They can't blame the system. You have to look at maybe the application wasn't great. You know what I'm saying? The temple president was too authoritative, micromanaging everything, not considering individuals, only his plan is great and all that. But because it was a temple and all that, you can't say, well, that's the Vedic system. I mean, the Magna Carta was written because of this mentality. You know, the universal, Bill of Rights? Or, Universal Declaration of Rights. Something like that, done in the 40s. That's done because of this mentality. So there's plenty of this mentality around. This is just gone. It's not Vedic. You know. So that's the thing, is that things will be done. Our own conditioning will be applied through the Vedic, and then we'll say, because I did it, it's, you know, I'm trying to be a devotee, so whatever I do is Vedic. No, it's that you're a devotee, you're trying to do everything connected to Krishna. Now, whether you're using the traditional forms or not, that's another point of discussion. But the point is you're sincerely trying to do that. Now, your anarthas get in the way, and therefore the false ego and this, the people don't appreciate. That's why, not because it's a temple, or because there's authority, or there's this and that, it's just conditioning gets in the way. No one minds an authority. They're surrendering like anything, right? Like that, you know how you say, you know, Bieber shows up and everyone's surrendering like anything. You know, it's like that. So it's like they don't have a problem with surrender. You know, so it's just all a smoke screen. These things. It's that all these things are going on. Oh no, but in the modern, it's this and that. What modern? Where is this modern? You go down on campus, like this time, I actually saw some modern culture this time. I've been going out for a lot, around here and there in different places, and you just see the same old, but the modern culture that devotees get all bent out of shape about, that we gotta, you know, cater to and all that, I actually saw this time when I went out for this 2 weeks to Finland, right? It's called the academics. They're the only ones that really sincerely believe all this jazz. But that's why they're in the university. They can't get a job anywhere else. There's no one else to take them. They're not real enough. You know, they're also, oh no, but what about the equality and that? What do you mean equality? Why do the kids give the class? Why are you giving a class? You know, if everything's equal. You know, why do you care that the other person wants to take over your seat? If it's all equal, hey, let anybody, you know, whoever's qualified, let them. You know, it's just all talk. It sounds great because they just sit around all day and think. And then it's like, that's where it is. Because otherwise, when you go around, you don't see that stuff. The only ones that talk it are devotees. When I talk to karmis, I talk to all kinds of karmis. And nobody talks like that. They just don't. You know, the only ones that I've had problem talking with, that any word I say, then it's wrong, and how can you say that, is only devotees. I've never had that with karmis. The karmis will just specifically say what's their problem. They won't say, no, but this one will think that. They don't think. They'll just go, I don't like that, or I don't understand that, or, you know, but you're a saintly person. Why would you say that? Or, you know, they'll say that, and then you have, you know exactly what you're dealing with. So then I saw it. You go out there and they talk like that. They really do. They sincerely talk like that. Yeah. And they do their best to train their students. Only the best ones learn it. And they're the ones that ask the questions. Everybody else is sitting there just waiting till the end of the term. You know? And so that means in that class, you know, 1, 2, 3 out of the big class. And everybody else is, that's your common people, is everybody else. And so that means, according to that, and that's those who are exposed to Western academic culture. So most of the world is not. So that means, you could say, probably a good portion of the world is not. And then of what is, only a very small portion becomes that. So when they say, well, everybody in the world, they're talking about a handful of people that you never see. You just don't bump into them. Right? They're not driving the taxi. They're not there selling you the thing behind the counter. You know, they're not walking down the street with you. You know? You know, it's just, you know, where is this person? So you combine the neophyte sentimental kind of view then with lack of culture and then so-called sophisticated atheistic morality mentality, then you have a really interesting soup. And the worst part is now, because of the food freaks, you can't even put sour cream in it. You know? So you can't even, like, you know, at least get something out of it. You know? So it's culturally weak. That's why devotees look all over the place for culture. Like that. We have our own culture. That's why, like Jiva Dharma Bhagavatam, then you see the culture. But they don't think, no, this is what I should apply in my life. So they go look somewhere else. But the problem is, someone who knows culture can see it. Someone who doesn't know it won't know. So even they go looking, because, you know, they talk about it and all that. So that this is the culture. So, oh, okay, let's try that. But still, it's not culture. You know. Right. Hopefully at least they're taking some yogurt. So that's, you know, at least they get that close to culture. You know. Very rare will they be going out to an opera, so then that's not going to be an option. So then I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe Kampuja, right? It's also a culture. That works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wrote an article on it, and somebody, a young devotee, just freaked out, basically.
Of course. Well, there's nothing else to do. Right, Krishna consciousness is waiting for something to come up on the internet and then freaking out. You know, it's like, that's you got nothing better to do. You know, what about chanting? What about associating with Vaishnavas? What about taking prasad together, giving gifts, accepting gifts? You know, confidential discussions. They want you to say all your confidential stuff, but they won't be confidential. You know. So, where's the basis of Vaishnav culture? Because it's those three, or six in those three categories. You know, food, discussion, like that's what it is. And if they don't, and gifts, if you don't do that, but then, you know, the whole thing is you can't give gifts, you can't do this, it's all, you know, everything's nationalized, you know, so it's just what has this got to do with anything, you know? So it's how does it work? And then it's complaining, oh, there's no culture, or there's no taste. And whose fault is that? Right. So it's the give a dog a bad name and hang it. So, therefore, the idea is study all these things very nicely. That's what we was. What was the term he used? That we just said scrutinizingly, or what was that? He said about studying Bhagavatam and that.
In this.
Yeah. He said something about. Oh, that was in the other one. It was in here. It was sound very specific. No. It was what he was saying here. Study Srimad Bhagavatam very scrutinizingly. Then you will understand the actual meaning of Brahma Sutra. From Madhya Lila 25:153. Very scrutinizingly. So scrutinizingly isn't done. You know, like that. Because scrutinizingly, then you can understand what's happening. You know, discern. Because intelligence, because that's the thing, is modern man prides himself at his intelligence, which is fine. Intelligence is good, but then actually use the intelligence. Intelligence means to discern.
It seems like, we go back to this problem, one thing that I've noticed is that if you study something and it's clear to you what you're reading intellectually, you've got it, but you go in ISKCON and you don't see it, then it's hard to, then you start thinking, do I understand it? Or do they not understand it? Or I must not understand it because nobody seems to be following this. Or this is just not applicable because nobody's doing it. So then, because it's not aligned, then although you're understanding things, you don't have the proper outlet.
Yeah, but that's why the important element is the self-realization, is you understand it, you apply it, in your life you get the benefit. If nobody else gets the benefit, then what to do? But at the same time, the Vaishnava etiquette, then whatever aspects are nice, that's where you interact on. You don't worry about the other ones. So that's the point, is apply it yourself in your own life. And then, you know, if it expands from there, others are interested, great. If not, then at least you get it, get the benefit. So that's the whole point, is that it's understood, because what's given is the ideal. But that ideal means it's actually a practical ideal. It works, and it can be done. It's just a matter of you value it, and you try to apply it. But the principle is what is always applicable. The detail, you may not have the ideal detail, but the principle is there. So that you can apply in your life and you can get benefit and it'll go on. At the same time, it's understood that because it's sadhana, then that means there will be those who either aren't understanding it, or understanding and not doing it, or are sometimes doing it but not regularly. But that's why you have that whole... The teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the Sanatana Goswami, start with this principle. Right? It means out of unlimited living entities, very few are human. And of the human species, the 400,000, very few are civilized. And Prabhupada defines civilized as following Varnashram. Right? Of those who are civilized, then only a few are Brahmins. Of those who are Brahmins, only a few are actually, you know, well-versed in the scriptures. Of those who are well-versed, only a few understand the transcendental. Of those who understand the transcendental, very few actually even endeavor for it. For those who have endeavored for it, very few obtain it. For those who have obtained it, very few actually understand Krishna. So that's basically your proportion. So therefore, don't worry about it.
I kind of worry about it in the sense of the new devotee.
The point is those devotees you have influence on, you give them some understanding.
And you're always like readjusting a little. But in our temple, but actually the philosophy is this. But we see this, but actually they don't understand.
Yeah, or you just take what they're doing and say, well, what's the reason for that? So in other words, even if the external, you know, that'll get, it's the point is, why do the internal? So even if you're doing it, are you getting the purpose of the internal? You're getting the purpose? Great. You know, so there'll be a little bit more of a difference in one place to another. You know, you can get that. Because that was the idea, is why you don't centralize, because then each place can function, you know, based on the principles. You could say the central aspect is when the senior Vaishnavas come together. And by that association and all that, then the common grounds are maintained. Then they go out and preach and apply it to each place will be unique. You know? So then it's a matter of understanding why they're doing that. You know, it's just like I remember once, it was the person was real anxiety. They were from one country. They had come to another country. And they were like freaked out at the difference in the ritual. It's just so extreme, the difference. You know, it's just the extremity of difference between the rituals. It was just, they were totally overwhelmed. And I said, okay, what is this point that you're there? He says, well, where we're from, then when during Artik, you're holding the bell, you have your arms straight and you ring the bell. But in this yatra, they bend their elbow and ring the bell. And it's just like they're just like freaking out. So then it's a matter of, it's not that this way or that way. What's the point of, you know, what's the bell for, you know? Why the bell? The bell is the embodiment of music. And so then by ringing it, then it creates music. So therefore, during the Artik, there's always music. So if there's a kirtan also, great. Then you have both the aspects. But if you don't, just by ringing the bell, music is there. So the point is what efficiently rings the bell? Like there's another option they didn't even think about. They're grabbing the bell like that. What happens if you hang it out the end of your fingers, you know, and ring it like that? You know, then it's another, you know, they probably would have maybe gone into, you know, shock or something. But, you know, so the point is the bell has to be rung. So therefore, don't worry about it. There they get the bell rung, here they get the bell rung. So as long as the bell's ringing, you know, and it matches with, you know, doing the artik, you know, then like that, they're not like hanging it on the head, shaking the head doing the artik. You know, then it might be a little difficult. But does that make sense? I've even seen, I think it was in L.A., they used those Catholic bells. So there's four bells on one thing, and you swing them like this, and they make a very nice sound. They were using those, you know. So the point is, bells should be rung. Like that. So generally that's the approach you generally take, is that is there. And then once they understand that, then if there's a need of adjusting the form, then you can do it because it's a reference. Otherwise they just see it as one form to the next, and just as you've adjusted it, someone else will adjust it. And like that. But if you always talk on the principle of it, you generally have very minimal problems. Because detail, much of the time, is just not understood. The principles are actually easier to understand, but just people aren't accustomed to understanding principle. Right? They're not used to dealing with principles. They're used to dealing with details. So therefore, someone who's smart in the material world has a better memory and a better logical way of dealing with details and putting them together in a way that they can use them. But very few deal with principles. That's the difference. Like, let's say, the guy with the MBA, he knows how to deal with all the facts in very, very nice ways, whatever's the latest, you know, like that. But he's still hired by a businessman that understands the principle. And if he needs to know something more about a detail, he asks the MBA guy. That's why he hired him. But the MBA guy will never actually understand business, because he only knows the details of business. He doesn't actually know the core principle. If he knew the core principle, why would he be doing an MBA? You're spending money on the MBA. You're supposed to be investing money to make money, like that, you know, putting it in capital, getting something back, like that. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that the really clever ones can deal with more detail. But a principle, they're not supposed to deal with. fact, sometimes if you come across the details, this, like ethical discussions. You know, like let's say you have a businessman, he's discussing ethics with a younger businessman. So he says, okay, so you have your partner in business, and the partner's not there. Now, if someone comes into the shop, buys something, okay? And they give you more money. They miscalculated, gave you more money than they should have. Right? And then they leave. So now here's the ethical consideration. Okay? Do you tell your partner or not? Yeah? Like that. So that kind of aspect. That makes sense. So ethics people generally don't get involved in much. They talk about it, certain things, externals, rituals, but actually the principle they don't. That makes sense? So that's why it's individual. And then those who you're comfortable with, who preach in that kind of similar way or have a vision, preach in their areas. And don't worry about the other areas. Point is you can only preach in so many places, so therefore choose where you get the most efficiency. So for the kind of preaching you do, you choose that area. You know, you're not going to be able to preach in all, 600 centers anyway. Right? And then you don't have to do that. And then you're just adding to what's already there. And big festivals, then everyone just comes together for kirtan or this or that, and then you preach and then go away. You don't have to deal with day-to-day details. So that combination. Specific places that are common nature, and festivals that you find that, the culture and the etiquette, you can deal with. And then Hari Bol. And you just got to do that for the next few years and then go back to God.
If you don't like it, go to places where they don't have the culture or they have the wrong culture, to switch them around.
Then if you can do that, then saying if that's the kind of preaching you like to do, then you pick those places. I remember we had one manager in the school would only deal with the kids that had problems. As soon as they stopped having problems, then someone else would take care of them. They would only take care of the ones that had all the problems. So the point is that's what I'm saying. You go to those places where you feel it works with what you want. So if what you want is, you have comedy of errors, but then you have something that would be absurd. It's a French. Can't remember. It's some old, 1800s. Or maybe the Macabre, or... Can't remember. It's old. Yeah, something like that. So if that's what you prefer, then, you probably will have many places you can find.
Unlimited.
Yeah. Unlimited. We have 600 centers, and so they're very, very different from one to the next. Yeah. Okay. So, should we start class? That was it. Pre-class, just a couple of questions. We start this when he was in the original power to give the correct answers to the free touch of the matter.
Yes.
Remember, we did something like that. Oh, because I was using your paper, right?
Page four.
Oh, yeah. Four. That's what I was asking you. Is the layout of the rest of the book like this, page four? It is, then we'll go through very quickly. Okay. Okay. So then text 3. Bhagavan Eka Evaste Parashakti Samanvita Tachakti Nisrito Jibo Brahmandam Cha Jatatmakam Jatatmakam. God is one. God has many transcendental powers. The individual spirit souls and the material worlds are all manifest with God's powers. Now, what was this taking? What were we going back from? Oh, okay, so now we're in the section on the second section. Now we're talking about the purified souls. Okay, yeah. Okay. Now I was wondering. Says, how did we get to this? Because I was connecting it with the Shikshan reading. Okay. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In the Vedic literature, it is said, Ekam eva dvitiyam. There is only one God, he has no rival. Neha nanasti kinchana. Nothing is separate from God. Savishva krid vishvavit. God created the world, he knows all that happens in the world. Pradhana kshetra patir gunesha. God is the master of the world, he is the master of the modes of material nature. Eko devo bhagavan varenyaha. There is only one God. He is the best of persons. He has all opulences. Interesting thing, I was in a Dubai airport, just sitting there. And, you know, one younger man, you know, full-on practicing Muslim came up. We started discussing, you know, because he had on his robes and I had one on. No, did I have a robe? Yeah, I think I had it because I was passing through, transiting. So he came over and sat down and we started talking. And I just said these things. Like that, just straight Vedanta philosophy. You know, God is one, this, that. And he was in ecstasy. You know, like that. We didn't talk rituals, we didn't talk anything. If anything came up, we talked about the principle of it. You know, respecting God, you know, all these different things like that. And we talked for quite a while. 20 minutes, half an hour. It was just straight Vedanta. And so it works. You know, it's just when you drop down into the ritual, that's when fireworks start. At that point, it's good. By these words, God's eternal existence is clearly confirmed. In Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, it is said, Vranti tat tattva vidas, tattvam yajjnanam advayam, brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabhyate. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call the non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Right? So here the point is non-dual. So when we're talking about Brahman, we're talking about Brahman as part of Krishna. You know, it's non-different from Krishna. Or Paramatma is non-different. So for the Vaishnavas, when we discuss the Brahman understanding, Brahman platform, it means in relationship to developing our relationship with Bhagavan. Like that. So we don't have any problem in discussing part of Brahman. Bhagavan, the Supreme Person, is superior to Brahman, the impersonal divine effulgence, and Paramatma, the all-pervading supersoul. Still, one should not think that Brahman Paramatma are two separate gods and Bhagavan is the supreme god that dominates them, right? So this idea of this coming of this trilogy element, then they want to make the non-difference, but the point is there's a difference, but that's on the platform of God himself. He has those aspects. But the difficulty comes is that then you also have the jivas and you have the Lord's associates. So when you leave all those elements out, then you'll get difficulty. Then they'll be trying to apply this principle to everything. So in other words, if everything's Brahman, then it's God in the same way as Bhagavan is. No, it's Brahman in the way Brahman is, and that is the transcendental Brahman is being manifest in the external energy Brahman. Right, so we're picking up on the Supreme Lord Brahman, not on the external energy Brahman. The external energy is the form that we see, but actually the potency that we're attracted to is the Supreme Lord. But we can see the difference in the aspects of Brahman, but at the same time as we can understand that oneness. So when people can't catch that, then they'll spend, you know, 2,000 years trying to define transcendental. Here the individual spirit soul is the seer and Bhagavan is the object seen. Right? When he first begins his spiritual life and he travels on the path of philosophical speculation, Jnanamarg, the soul sees the Brahman feature of Bhagavan. When he makes some advancement on the path, the soul begins to walk on the path of yoga, yoga mark. When he walks on that path, the soul sees the Paramatma feature of Bhagavan. When by good fortune the soul walks on the path of pure devotional service, Shuddha Bhakti Marg, the soul sees Bhagavan directly. Bhagavan brings great sweetness to the eyes. He is full of transcendental bliss, right? So we have both the element that we're walking on this path, but that's being the goal being Shuddha Bhakti. Therefore, these other aspects that one's walking on are considered as good as, right? That's the meaning of that, the word iti. It's explained by Baladev in the verse by Rupa Goswami on pure devotion. The iti means, and all those in support of. Right? So then, in other words, you'll see Krishna directly as a person, but at the same time as we're seeing everything in relationship to that person. But we may be seeing it in connection to Brahman or Paramatma. You know, oh, I should do this because the rule is like that. If you don't do this, then it'll be bad. But why? If it's just the rule, that's Paramatma. If I don't go to Mangalarti and Krishna is there waiting for the devotees to come and I don't come, Krishna will feel bad that I'm not there. You know, that's the Bhagavan. But generally, if you go to Mangalarti, if you don't go to Mangalarti, you know, then this and that, or, you know, at best, then your prophet said. Does that make sense? So then the difficulty comes is that we're not actually looking at it from the Bhagavan platform. We're going to see Bhagavan, but we're looking, the reason we're there is from the Paramatma platform. Right? Or we're just looking at it's good, it's a nice thing, you know, it's a religious thing, then it's kind of in between Paramatma and Brahman. You know what I'm saying? If it's, well, you know, because if you do a situation in the mode of goodness like that, then you're just seeing Brahman. So when we give an explanation like why we go to Mangalarti, we use all of them. You know, it's the Brahma Muhurta, the best time of the day, spiritual realization, this, that, blah. So just that experience, that's Brahman. That's the rule, that's Paramatma. Why it's done at that time, that's because that's Krishna gets up at that time. And that the Mangalarti, we're thinking it's a this or that. The Mangalarti is actually being performed by the gopis, you know, out with Radha and Krishna. For us, that's where the Mangalarti is going on. Because when he comes home, Mother Yashoda doesn't do an arti when he gets up. She wakes him up, you know, brushes teeth, this, that, hands, feet. Then he'll go and milk the cows and take care of those things. Then he'll come back, have his bath, get dressed, and have breakfast. There was no Mangalarti. Right? In Vaikuntha, then when they wake him up and they do also the washing the hands, mouth, and feet, then they do the arti. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the form we're using, the Pancharatra, works in all the realms. So that means it also has to be in line with the Vaikuntha. But in Vaikuntha, there the Lord gets up early, all the devotees are there, they do the arti. But in Vrindavan, the Lord gets up early, but the only ones that see that are the gopis. You know, so it does have that extra element. He is full of transcendental bliss. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. His form is graceful. He is very handsome and charming person. He has all opulence, all power, all fame, all handsomeness, all knowledge and all renunciation. He has them in the best, the most sublime way. Brahman and Paramatma are both hidden within Bhagavan. Bhagavan has all potencies. By his wish, his potencies manifest as regular and occasional pastimes. Right? Because there's ones that are always going on, and then there's ones that occasionally happen to give flavor to the regular ones. Right? He is supremely independent. He is the author of all rules and regulations. Right? It's one of the 64 qualities of Krishna that he follows the Shastra, the rules of the Shastra, because he is the one who is the author of them. Right? In other words, if you have something you like to do, like every evening you like to, let's say, come and sit in your living room on the couch and look out the window, you know, over the valley, over the lights. So then that's what you write down. So in the evening, then, you know, that's what happens. So then we'll go, oh, so many rules. Why do we have to follow these rules? I'd rather stay in my room and play video games. No, because the point is you want to develop a relationship with God. That's what God likes to do. The rules are there because that's what God does. You know, it means we get bent out of shape. Why do we have to? Means, you know, we're there. Why do I have to wash my feet? You know, I didn't like, you know, pour Dawl all over my feet or stuff like that. But God washes his feet. It's in the song. You know, we sing it every day at the Bogarty. He does that. He likes to do that. So that's why we do it. You know, you can give all kinds of other, you know, tantric and Ayurvedic and all kinds of reasons and this and that. But the point is the reason the rule is there is because God likes to do that. He likes to sit in lines and eat. He likes to, someone serves. He likes all that. So that's why we do it. Right? And so, and what's the end result? You know, that down the line, then we have, you know, how you say? Buffet out of old ghee buckets with soup ladles, you know, for everything, you know, while no one's there, while we are in the little cafeteria area with benches and chairs with our shoes on. Did I miss something? Right. Oh, and we eat with a plastic spoon.
And
TV. Yeah, TV also. Yeah. Yeah, why not? Yeah, also the microwave.
The styrofoam plates.
The styrofoam plates, yes. Yes, the styrofoam plates. Yeah. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. So that's the thing. He is the author of all the rules and regulations, right?
Next quality called dharmic.
Called dharmic. Yeah. He follows rules. At that. Still, he is never bound by any rules or regulations, because the point is the rules and regulations are just what he does. He doesn't have to follow. He's doing because he likes to follow it. So that's the point of Rag Marg, is that it's not that it's not rules. It's that you like following rules. That's the difference. Vaidhi, you're doing because you have to and that you'll get a result from it. Rag, you're doing because you like it. That's the difference. Not that it's, oh no, you're reading about the gopis. That makes it rag. That has nothing to do with it. Right? It means the cowherd boys can also be in rag marg. So its point is not about that. That's an aspect of learning the mood of that particular devotee. But that's already when rag is there. You don't have rag, how do you then follow in the footsteps? Right? Because we saw as the first thing in Shravana Dasa is learning the attitude. Then you can start learning the social situation and who does what, and then follow in the footsteps of somebody specific. But the attitude of rag is already there in the first stage. Then you get to these, we start off with rag is defined as I read about the, you know, specific devotee and then contemplate. That's the third stage. The first stage is just adjusting with the mood that, you know, they have in Vrindavan. Everybody's a servant. Everybody's spontaneously serving Krishna. Everybody's cooperating together. Right? Aren't these things Prabhupada talked about? You know, your love for him will be shown by how you cooperate. That's what they do in Vrindavan. That's what they do in the spiritual world. Right? Everybody's a servant. Everybody, it's not, oh, about gopis, this, that. It's all about being a servant, cooperating. You know, keeping Krishna as the center. That's what makes Vrindavan. All the realms of Vaikuntha do that. Vrindavan does it in the most intense way, to the point where it's all about Krishna and pleasing Krishna and cooperating together to serve Krishna, that they don't even sometimes remember the rules. But the point is it's the attitude that you're applying within the form of the rules. Otherwise, what form do you use?
The attitude is in relation to culture.
Yeah, I mean, the culture is the art of applying the philosophy. Right? Because the philosophy has to be, how do you apply humility? Right? So then the culture of that is by in the performance of your prescribed duties, the difficulties that come up on the way of the body, the mind, and the senses, or the intellect, you tolerate that. Right? That's where you know that I'm not the doer, I'm only the servant. I'm an instrument. Right? Does that make sense? That's humility. Does that make sense? So that means humility is the symptom of actual knowledge. Right? So if someone has knowledge and not humble, then they don't have real knowledge. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you go out and lay down in front of the door, you know, as the foot mat for the devotees. You know, it's a nice sentiment, but that's a made-up, created thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's some fun, but it's not the act. 'Cause the point is that when your duties are being performed, that you're able to go through them and not become proud or not become disheartened. You know, that's where it's applied.
So then,
yeah. Yeah, so many sense. Therefore, one can be very bold. So many emotional kind of moods can be there, and one can still be humble. Like that. Okay, so then we'll end here. Actually, 1.5 pages. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premana ki. Yes, yes.
You didn't record the other part.
No.
Yeah.
But that was Mr. iPhone.
Oh, was there the whole time?
Yes.
Oh, okay.